Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Victoria Dupuy will be telling us about Ability Corps. So, can you tell me a little bit about your disabilities work?
I work for Ability Corps, and under the umbrella of Ability Corps is Ability Magazine, which we started 31 years ago with the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act here in the United States. And about 5 years in to publishing the magazine, we realized one of the biggest hurdles for people with disabilities was finding a career. And so we launched Job Access, and throughout the years and better technology, we started the first and largest now job board for people with disabilities to connect them with employers.
So,
Then a few years ago, we started an online job fair, not seeing anything in the future about epidemics and pandemics and all that, but the online job fair has just been tremendous for both employers who can't send their recruiters around the country to recruit, but also for employers here as well as in Canada. Now we have employers up in Canada that post jobs on abilityjobs.com on our job board, and also global corporations, they also post jobs for people with disabilities around the world. And so it's just opened up, technology's just opened up a whole new venue for us. And then our latest project is Ability E. We were contacted by casting agents and by studios that they wanted to actually cast people with the disability they portray on camera. And so now we've launched AbilityE.org to work and to help the studios be able to cast people for commercials, movies, TV, you name it, even in print ads and photo ads, people who actually have the disability that they portray. And as you can tell, this year I think movie of the year is Coda, and we'll see if it gets the Oscar this Sunday. So it's just opened up a whole new world for talented job seekers with skills in front of and behind the camera. So it's Ability E is just taken off like a rocket.
So it's funny you mentioned about global corporations. We talked earlier, you mentioned you have a personal connection to the whole situation for persons with disabilities in the Ukraine. Tell me a little about that.
Well, what I mentioned before was that my grandmother is from Ukraine, And so that's kind of my connection. But there are many people in Ukraine. In fact, I was just watching a news story about this young lady who's in a wheelchair and in Ukraine and trying to get her out, and many other people with disabilities in Ukraine that are trapped. And then once some of them are able to actually escape, trying to find adequate housing that is accessible in Poland or the other countries where they are running to, it's extremely challenging. This one apartment building got bombed where a young daughter who was on oxygen and other accessible needs, they had to take her directly to the hospital, you know, and we all know hospitals are also getting bombed. So it's as bad as everything is for everybody in Ukraine, it's extremely dangerous for people with disabilities. They're not able to flee. If the power is out, their accessible required oxygen and other devices that they have don't work, and it's just a horrific situation.
So I'd imagine that's an interesting point. You can't exactly flee and take all your accessible equipment with you. A lot of these people would seem to be losing everything they have, including mobility devices, life-sustaining equipment, what have you.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people rely on electronic devices for hearing, for speech, for vision, and all that is not working because the power's out. So it's just a horrendous situation.
So what impact do you think this would have on someone coming in from the Ukraine, trying to find work in another country, to be able to actually have their livelihoods and be able to sustain?
Well, I know that other countries like Poland, they're immediately giving people work visas so that if they're there for a couple of years, they can begin work right away. And I know that they just announced yesterday that the United States is going to accept thousands of refugees. And certainly we have the organizations that are prepared to assist people with disabilities as they arrive in the United States, as I'm sure is the situation in Canada and other countries.
So, in your time working with persons with disabilities, is there any success story that stands out for you?
One of the first people that we assisted with getting connected with casting directors through Ability E, she ended up getting a wonderful role. Through our 31 years of publishing Ability magazine, there's been many, many success stories of athletes through the Paralympics, Special Olympics. A lot of people are not born with a disability, but become disabled because of an accident or illness. And so people enter the people with disabilities world with a whole new set of challenges and that they've never experienced before. And so it's been really very eye-opening for a lot of people who become disabled. So I don't know what other specifics you might want, but I guess I could be my own example. I've always been a, you know, sports person and fully abled, and then I got in a horrific accident, became disabled, and through the Disability Resource Center in Venice, California, they got me connected with a St. Joseph's Center that offered a free class for women to learn how to code. It's called Code Talk, and they have classes of 12 women every 4 months, and it's a boot camp, so it's intense training. And so I took that boot camp, And that led to this job. So I guess that's the success story that I can reflect on personally after becoming disabled, getting the training, and then getting a career.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This next interview was a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, our friend Celeste Simpson will be giving us an update on her disabilities work. So tell me a little bit about your latest disabilities work.
So, actually this past Sunday, March 20th, we all gathered at the lake, or at the river, and we did a walk for Down Syndrome Day. And that was a huge success, actually. It was our first in-person event in 2 years, which was really exciting. All the proceeds will go to Up About Down, Windsor, Essex. So they were also there with us, which was awesome. I love that group. They're the sweetest. I think we raised about $2,000, so that's awesome as well. So we finished that, and now we're on to the next, super short after. We're doing our disability inclusion webinar on Tuesday, April 5th. So we started this last year. We kind of just needed another event to do, and I came up with a webinar about disability open to all programs, all students in all programs, as a way to kind of give them a basic understanding of disability and kind of start them on their journey to learning a little bit more. So last year, the members all researched topics and presented them. We had a couple guest speakers. This year, it'll be the same thing, except instead of guest speakers, we're having community organizations throughout Windsor Essex to record a 1 to 3 minute video about the services they offer. If some of them want, they can do kind of a little pitch to everybody watching for job opportunities as well. So yeah, it's coming up April 5th, 5 to 7. I'm really excited. It was a huge success last year, so I'm hoping for the same this year as well.
So in that sense, with events like these, how are you going about reaching out to people, both students and just the general public about with an interest in disabilities, about the work you're doing?
So our big thing is social media, especially in the last couple of years. We really revamped all of our social medias. We reach out to other student groups, and they share content as well. So that's really helpful when they put our content out to their followers, because a lot of those might not be following us. So that's kind of the big thing we do. One of our members, I didn't organize the Down Syndrome Day walk, it was another one of our members, and she created a Facebook page, and she reached out to community members. She got a sponsorship for the event as well, so it's just all of us kind of know people in certain areas, and that helps out a lot. But yeah, I would say social media has been a huge, huge help in the last 2 years with our events, so.
So, with things going back more towards in-person, what sorts of plans do you have for engagement as far as the student population goes?
Well, I'm going to be done in about a month, and then I have to pass the baton on to somebody else. But before, we usually did, they have club stay on campus and stuff where you can kind of recruit people that way. But I would say, honestly, we'll do those things for sure if they're available. But I would say we'd probably keep to social media as well. We'll keep advertising everything through there. We kind of did that before, but like I said, we've amped it up a lot in the last 2 years. So I would say we would do those in-person things, but also reaching out through social media to other groups and faculties. It has been a success so far, so I would say they'd probably continue that.
So, with your own transitioning, do you see yourself continuing to be an advocate for persons with disabilities?
Absolutely. I hope to be kept in the loop with everything with DSSA. I'm definitely sad to leave. This has been my life for the last 5 years and very much a part of my life the last 3 years. So I definitely want to keep in the loop with what they're doing and help wherever I can. I definitely want to work with people with disabilities as well. That was something I never thought I would do when I started my university career, but as I've been able to be a part of these events, work with organizations within the community and other people with disabilities throughout this group, I definitely would like to have a job with people with disabilities down the road for sure.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for the continued push for equality and inclusion of persons with disabilities?
Well, for me, I am always continuing to educate myself on disability issues, and being a part of this group, I've been able to do that a lot more. I've obviously had students in the group with disabilities, so you learn a lot from them. Yeah, I would just say continue to educate yourself on the current issues, past issues, and then kind of further your research to see what you can do to help out. For me, I was very, 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 very lucky to have stumbled upon this group. Without this group, I don't think I would be doing half the work that I have done, and I'm super grateful for that. Yeah, and also with that, I guess join groups too. Join advocacy groups, join student groups, the groups in your community that are fighting for and advocating for those issues as well.
So, do you have any advice to, say, a newcomer to having a vested interest in disability matters? Someone coming in the way that you did years ago, looking for a place to serve and belong?
Well, for me, like I said, this group just came out of nowhere for me, and I just like, you know what, I need to be part of something, so I'm gonna join this group. Best decision. I would say just if the opportunity arises, go for it. Jump on that opportunity. And also if, you know, like me, like they came into my class, but for you, it's the opportunity doesn't come directly to you, I'd say search it out. If you're wanting to do this work, do your research through your university, through your community, what groups are available. And join them. Honestly, I could not have asked for a better group all 5 years. The people in this group are some of the best people I've ever known in my entire life. I've created a lot of friendships and connections through this group. So just take that first step. Reach out, join, go to the meetings, see what it's about, and yeah, go from there.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Holiday weekend travel will attract thousands of Canadians to our highways over the Easter weekend. Jeff Shepley, Excavating and Road Maintenance, reminds drivers to take responsibility for reducing traffic mishaps. Here are three important safety tips. Don't drive impaired, avoid speeding and tailgating, and if the pavement is wet, allow for greater stopping distance. Enjoy the Easter long weekend safely. A community reminder from Jeff Shepley, Excavating and Road Maintenance in Essex. Visit us online at shepleyexcavating.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Victoria Dupuy told us a little bit about Ability Corps, and Celeste Simpson shared her reflections on student support for individuals with disabilities. In this segment of our show, Michelle Mannion will be telling us about parenting a child with PCD. So, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with PCD?
Yes, so PCD stands for primary ciliary dyskinesia, and it's an umbrella term for a group of genetic disorders that affect the structure and or function of cilia that line the airways in the upper and lower respiratory tract. And they also do a couple of other things. They help determine organ placement in the embryonic period. So people with PCD can have their organs misplaced or in the wrong area. They're also found in the ventricles of the brain, and rarely there can be hydrocephalus or other kind of brain involvement. And a lot of people with PCD have infertility or subfertility because cilia are also...
Okay, yeah.
So I don't remember if I was saying they're important for organ placement. I'm not sure what part got caught there. So I'll just go, I'll start again. Is that okay? And you can edit it or?
Yes.
Okay. So cilia are also important for organ placement. So in the embryonic period, so people with PCD may have their organs completely reversed or have some other organ or anomalies, which is called situs problems. And they are important in the organs of reproduction for both males and females. So subfertility and infertility may be a part of the PCD profile. I got involved because my daughter was diagnosed with this disorder at age 7 in 1991 after being sick essentially from the day she was born with respiratory infections.
So are there any treatments available for PCD?
There are currently no approved treatments for PCD. We haven't had studies that show that anything is particularly effective. So the treatments that are used are borrowed from other diseases like asthma or cystic fibrosis.
So do you know offhand about how many people are affected by PCD?
We don't have great demographic information, but we do know that a paper just came out that suggested PCD is actually twice as common as we thought. So the old school thinking used to be 1 in 15,000, so we now think it's 1 in 7,500. And it does not have any racial or ethnic preference, so it's pan-ethnic, it affects all races.
So how do you go about reaching out to the affected community to let them know that there are others on the same sort of journey?
That is actually a really great question, and it's very challenging because a lot of people with PCD, in fact, the vast majority of them, do not know they have it, and they've probably never heard the term, and they're sitting at an allergist's office or at a ear, nose, and throat doctor's office being treated for chronic disease that they don't know is related to this genetic disorder. Right now, what we're attempting to do is develop a clinical center's network. So throughout Canada and the U.S., we have 40 centers that are specialist centers, and we try to direct people there to get the diagnosis confirmed and to get into the right kind of a treatment program. And we have launched a registry to try to reach out to people as well. But it's very hard because, like I said, this is not a term most people have heard at the time of their diagnosis.
So you mentioned your daughter was 7 when she was diagnosed. How did you go about getting that diagnosis and ultimately responding to it?
Yeah, I think this is the diagnostic journey is kind of a similar thing regardless of what the rare disorder is. A lot of times that they're very hard to diagnose. In my daughter's case, she was born with some of the classic features of PCD. She had distress right at birth. With her ability to breathe, she had a little chest wall deformity. That's not serious, but it is kind of more common in people with PCD called pectus excavatum. And she started having problems with pneumonias and infections within the first weeks of life. So it took 7 years. She was given probably five. I'm sorry, I got to get my dog.
Quite all right.
She had probably 5 or 6 diagnoses before we arrived at PCD, and multiple specialists. She was in the doctor's office all the time, and it is a little bit crazy-making. You start to think maybe you're, you know, seeing things that aren't there. But we did finally get the diagnosis. At that time, none of the genes were known, so the diagnosis was done via a biopsy where they actually look inside the cilia to see if they're structurally sound.
So how did you cope with it, finding out that she had a rare condition? For any parent, that's got to be It's got to be a hard thing to weigh on you.
Yeah, you know, and I hear this from a lot of parents, too. In some ways, it is such a huge relief to finally have an answer for what's going on that that's the immediate response is, oh, thank goodness, we know what it is. And in my case, it was, oh, thank goodness, it's just those little hair things. Let's get her on the cilia medicine and fix this up. And it wasn't until her doctor said, we need to have a family meeting and we're going to, you know, move her over into the specialty care clinic, that I started to think, oh, I guess this might be a little more serious than I thought. And it is an adjustment period. I think one thing that was very helpful is the physician that diagnosed her really did bring the whole family together. Anybody who was going to be involved in her care was included in the education piece right up front. And I think that was very helpful.
So, in the time since then, have there been any successes or any progress made that stand out for you?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest success is that we have genetic testing. I mean, when she was diagnosed in 1991, everybody knew this was a genetic disorder, and they were pretty convinced it was autosomal recessive, but we didn't have any genes, so it was hard to know. And genetic testing was a pipe dream. We would not have even thought it was possible. Now we are up to over 50 genes. There are commercially available genetic panels all over the place, and it has really changed diagnosis. It's not by any means perfect, but it has really, really helped compared to where we were at when she was diagnosed. I think the other thing is the specialty centers that we've been able to set up. When we got started, our goal was to improve the care and quality of life for people with PCD. We were not even thinking about cure, and we have since changed our mission that we are actually looking to cure this disorder.
So, if you could send any message to the community about what they should know about PCD, what would you say?
I would say that PCD is rare, but cilia are not. We all have them, and anytime you have a cold, you have a dysfunctional cilius syndrome, a secondary one. So it is very important, like with a lot of rare diseases, to look at these disorders as natural laboratories for more common disorders and to take them seriously. Make sure that the research and the care and understanding these diseases, that the investment is made to do that to help everybody.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep, I'm good.
For Celeste, the moment of graduating must be bittersweet, leaving behind some of the things she's come to work on for individuals with disabilities. But I believe it also represents a world of new possibilities. When a person leaves one set of circumstances, they don't necessarily leave behind the values or the ideals that they learned along the way. For her, she can go on to help even more individuals with disabilities, maybe not in an academic setting, but in a professional one. The truth is, academics and professional life do play off each other. You learn the fundamentals, not always by just what you learn in the classroom. In fact, some of the most valuable lessons I ever learned about disability life were from my fellow students, people I spent time around. You laugh with them, you cry with them, you come to know they're more than just a medical condition or what you'd find in a textbook. They're a living, breathing, complex human being. That is a lesson we can all carry forward from one circumstance to another. The desire to make things better for persons with disabilities is an ever-growing one. Once it's instilled in you, something you carry with you. And as you carry it forward, you find new, better ways just to enhance the quality of life. And that, my friends, builds better communities. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.